You're listening to episode 27 of The Gearheart. I'm your reader, writer, and host, Alex White. Renee White is the voice of our female characters. If you haven't had a chance yet, or you're listening on iTunes or Podiobooks.com, you can stop by The Gearheart blog and interact at www.thegearheart.com. There you'll find podcaster interviews, articles, The Gearheart soundtrack, and more. Or you can email me directly at alex@thegearheart.com. Don't forget that you can also follow us on Twitter, username The Gearheart. And now, settle in, pour a cup of tea, and enjoy as we bring you more tales of The Gearheart. Last time on The Gearheart, Jonathan nearly fell under Slade's spell, perhaps never to return, but summoned the will to fight for Isabel. Squaring off against Queensman Hadley, Jonathan learns that it might not be enough. Will he survive? Will he save Isabel? Find out on The Gearheart. Isabel interrupted the moment. In an entrance like the sun bursting over the mountains at dawn, she rocketed into the sky from the smoking husk of a building below. Trails of flame and debris clung to her form, a silken garment of destruction, and there was a collective shout from the crowd. Some of them began to fire their weapons. Some of them cast spells. Most of them ducked or ran for cover. The flaming woman launched bolt after bolt of hellfire, and as they struck the ground below, her magic plowed wide swaths of brilliant orange through the gathered crowd. At first glance, it seemed as though Isabel was in complete control. So much magical energy poured out of her that her burning glyphs drew themselves in the sky from the sparks that flaked from her body. It looked as though hot flies surrounded her, each one wrought from a burning coal and glowing with intelligence and menace. Her eyes blazed bright, inspiring fear and awe in the crowd below. Jonathan saw something different, though. He saw that the rifts had turned her delicate skin into a mosaic of fire and pain. He saw her heaving chest, begging for more breath, and the frailty inherent in her body. And while the seekers below saw her blazing stars for eyes, Jonathan saw what they could not, squint as they might. He saw an expression that he'd last seen when they were lost in the woods together as children. Desperation and determination. Jonathan's heart bristled in his chest, and he shouted up to her.
Run, Izzy!
Queensman Hadley used the distraction to his full advantage and barreled at Jonathan with Slade's greatsword. The young man zipped out of reach, but Hadley's left hand disengaged the sword and swept out with a hidden dagger, slicing Jonathan's cheek to the bone. A splash of red fell across the Queensman's jacket as he pressed the attack further, swiping at Jonathan with a tremendous weapon. Jonathan threw his cape into the oncoming attack, sidestepped and lashed out with a riposte from his gauntleted fist. The Queensman vanished and reappeared, planting his dagger deep into the bulging muscle of Jonathan's sword arm. The disarmed swordsman howled and threw his arm over the Queensman's, wrapping his tortured limb under Hadley's shoulder and forcing the man's spine into an extended arch. Jonathan attempted to bring the crown of his head onto the bridge of the Queensman's nose, but to no avail. Hadley flickered and folded, leaving Jonathan empty-handed and stumbling to regain his balance. A loose rock wedged against Jonathan's boot and sent him sprawling onto his belly. Without a doubt, Hadley would appear behind him to exploit the loss of ground with a lethal strike. Jonathan didn't wait to counter. He seized a handful of soil through the snow and spun as fast as he could, launching it upwards into the air in a wide arc. It worked better than Jonathan could have hoped, and Hadley reappeared face first in the cloud of dirt, shouting as it blinded him. Knowing that this might be his only chance, Jonathan braced his back against the ground and launched a kick straight at Hadley's face, the potency of Slade's body turning his boot into a cannonball. The heel of his boot connected with the Queensman's nose with a sickening crunch, and Jonathan had every intention of plowing through the man's head like a melon. He would make Hadley pay for delaying him. But it was a glancing blow as Hadley shifted away into the ether. When the Queensman reappeared, he was standing over Jonathan, the young man's own greatsword poised delicately against his throat. Queensman Hadley's nose gushed blood onto the swordsman, but it didn't make a difference. At this distance, there was no way for Hadley to miss, and Jonathan's arms were still at his sides where he had braced against the ground. A simple stick, and Jonathan's life would flow onto the ground faster than water from a waterfall.
"Any last words?" groaned Hadley.
It was galling to end his life this way, but Jonathan chose not to sneer. He looked into Hadley's red, blood-rimmed eyes and said,
"Please, save Isabel."
Hadley glanced up at the mayhem in the courtyard and grit his teeth. Jonathan wanted to lash out at the assailant the moment his eyes traveled, but he knew it wouldn't work. Hadley was just too fast. Constant explosions rocked the courtyard as seekers who attempted to stand their ground were burned to a crisp. Even some of the ones who fled in terror found themselves chased by flame as they ducked away from the fire goddess's wrath. The Queensman grimaced, and his eyes fell back upon Jonathan's punctured body.
"I can't do that, Andrews. I'll make sure it's quick, though."
Things began to blur as Jonathan's tenuous hold on his new power started to disappear. The rush of concussive air blasted snowflakes around the courtyard, which settled on Jonathan's face and melted into frozen drops. There was an unforeseen price to Jonathan's transformation, and his grip upon his body became slippery. Slade was oozing forward into the cracks in Jonathan's spirit, slowly taking control of anything into which he could sink his claws, oiling the path that led to dormancy for Jonathan. Whatever happened, it was extremely unlikely that Jonathan would see any part of it. Slade would have to take control soon if he wanted there to be a body at all. However, for the first time in recent memory, Jonathan realized something. He didn't want to die. He had fought. He had bled. He had made them suffer in spite of the fact that he never should have even been able to touch them.
"Queensman, wait!"
came the rough accent of a young female, barely audible over the howling chaos of the courtyard.
"Whew! I'm here to help."
Jonathan's eyes darted over to see a bubbly lady in a suit jogging over to where he lay. A silver revolver glinted in the sunlight as she ran, and soon she was upon them. Queensman Hadley shook his head and raised the greatsword in a gesture of oncoming execution.
"I'm just finishing up here, Agent Barrett. I don't need your help," said the Queensman.
Jonathan steeled his nerves and prepared to find out what death felt like as the sharp tip left his throat. Hadley never took his eyes off of Jonathan's, making sure not to miss one single thought of escape that the young man had. That was probably why he missed it when Agent Barrett lowered her revolver to his kidney from behind him.
"How presumptuous,"
she said.
"I wasn't talking to you."
The pop of Barrett's revolver was the bell that signaled Jonathan's resurrection to the world. Hadley's face showed no trace of recognition of the event that had just transpired, but his knees locked as though he could no longer control his body. With his right hand, Jonathan blitzed the blade and knocked the tip clear of his throat. His feet danced and spun in the air in a complex formation that brought Jonathan flying to his feet, and the young man's vigorous left hand shot out and seized the pommel of the weapon from his opponent. Hadley's expression still hadn't quite reached the point of shock when Jonathan delivered him a spinning kick that launched him directly at the onrushing flames of Isabel. However, that seemed to be what snapped him out of his stupor, and the Queensman winked out of existence before he could meet the conflagration beyond. Jonathan waited for his nemesis to reappear, bracing himself against an attack he could probably not defend. But the man never showed. Wherever he was, Jonathan doubted he would survive the night. He turned to face this Agent Barrett with a look of utter surprise.
E.G. Wallaby, at your service,
said Barrett. Jonathan's mind should have been aflame with questions, but he asked none of them. He nodded at Wallaby and, his posture full of deference, Jonathan said, "Thanks," and turned to the greater problem. Isabel was in pain. The flames were screaming. When Jonathan turned back, he saw his friend swarming with spells and creatures of all varieties. They dragged at her, bringing the blazing woman down to their level as they attacked. She lashed out with her flames, burning away some of them, but soon she would be overwhelmed and struck down by the very organization to which she had devoted her life. Jonathan brought the pommel to rest in his left hand, the guard flush with his thumb, and he felt the surety of his blade in the edge of his mind. Even without his right hand to guide the strikes, Jonathan's brute force would be more than a match for any opponent in single combat. Some of the nearby agents turned as though they felt Jonathan's eyes upon them. Jonathan did not tell them to step aside. The time for words was over. If they were brave enough to stand in his way, then they were foolish enough to die. Jonathan lunged forward in a whirl of glittering steel and snow, weaving between spells and cutting down any opponent with the misfortune to get too close. He shoved Slade once more to the back of his mind, mustering that will that had brought Jonathan his ancestor's power moments before. Jonathan knew that there would be a price for it soon, but he damned all caution. Isabel was waiting for him, and he would rush to meet her on a road of corpses if he had to do so. An old man, a few yards away, traced a glyph in the air almost as large as he was. Jonathan recognized him. He was one of the council and privy to some of the Seeker's greatest secrets. Even still, it was shocking to the swordsman that someone so frail could push so much power through a sigil. In a blast of arcane energy, the sky was crushed under the sudden weight of a great, black-winged lizard. The world of those on the ground felt sheared in half as the deafening explosion following the creature's appearance rocked the combatants from their feet. The old man remained standing, but Isabel was hurled to the ground like a meteor. The thing was primal, not like the legends of beasts battled by the knights of old. Its translucent black skin slid over muscles the color of rotting leaves, and it howled like the clashing of swords. It dripped stinking ichor onto the crowd below every time it flapped its wings, and when it thrashed its tail, Jonathan knew it was the incarnation of destruction. With a crooked finger, the counselor directed the dragon to descend upon Isabel. With the other Seekers shaken away from her, she rose into the sky to meet the lizard, a coronal light blazing from her brow as she engaged. The dragon snapped its jaws like lightning strikes in answer to her challenge, its teeth glinting in the pallid winter light. Isabel first directed the flames to encircle the beast on all sides, forming an unbroken cage of energy. She tightened her fists and balls of fire appeared in them, which she then hurled through the cage at the animal's heart. They struck home, and the dragon gnashed and bellowed its disapproval. But there was no indication of any damage. With a single flap of its sinewy wings, the black beast tore out of the cage and sped after Isabel.
"Isabel!"
Jonathan shouted, but he forced himself to stop watching the battle in the skies. He knew that he had to kill the counselor who birthed the eldritch thing into the fight before it rent Isabel limb from limb. Two Seekers moved between Jonathan and the counselor, but they were no challenge. Jonathan dispatched them without a second thought. When he reached the dragon's master, the man was not interested in Jonathan. He didn't seem conscious of anything, in fact, save for what was going on above him. When the blade bit into the elder's flesh, Jonathan was rewarded with a violent cleaving action and a gruesome death. But as the body sloughed away, the counselor remained. The old man stood stock still, his body replaced by a luminous white form, which distorted the air around it. He continued to direct the beast above, even as the old body breathed its last. The glowing transformation resonated with the morale of the Seekers around Jonathan, and he found himself facing more enemies than before, each inspired by the martyrdom of their master. Jonathan could only guess that the counselor was somehow fused with the dragon, and that, when the spell ended, the old man would vanish. However, with no passage into the skies, Isabel was left to face her foe alone. The only thing that he could do was concentrate on the bedlam on the ground. Jonathan readied his weapon. Any man or woman who attempted to cast a spell upon Isabel must die.
"Keep going, Ellsworth!"
shouted Keegan, reflexively ducking as a bullet ricocheted near his head. Augustus, Keegan, and Maeve tore through the halls towards the hangar deck underneath the palace, with several guards in hot pursuit. The halls leading up to the open area seemed endless, and the trio was further separated by Keegan's utter exhaustion. The headmaster was a potent magus, but he had drawn his glyphs too large and pushed too much power through them. He paid the price with utter sluggishness, and Augustus kept dragging Maeve back to retrieve his leader. As automatic fire filled the hall with rock dust, Augustus gnashed his teeth.
"Just a little bit farther,"
he shouted.
"Oh, I'm gonna make them regret they ever hauled this thing over here."
Augustus wanted his guns. He'd surrendered all of the magical weapons on his way into the palace, as many of them were deemed too dangerous to carry around in the halls. When they'd brought the Avenger over the sea on a barge, it was because the hangman could fly, and they might have to fight him in the air. Not because the Fumiston chapter might have to beat a hasty retreat away from Seeker headquarters. When they rounded the corner, they saw what they wanted. A long, wide-open complex, with a runway that ran the length of the center. Each of the barren stone walls was held up by massive steel girders, as the complex was largely underground. It emptied into the cliffs north of Cerceval over the spray of the ocean. Planes sat parked along the edges of the walls, and Augustus spotted several experimental designs that caught his fancy. Circumstances did not warrant investigation, though. They dashed into the open space of the hangar deck, and Augustus ran and fetched a ladder. Maeve ducked behind the bright red fuselage of the Avenger, waiting for her pursuers to round the corner. Keegan turned to face the door and traced another of his glyphs, though this one was far more controlled and smaller than the others he had been throwing around. The sigil, however, flickered and collapsed in on itself, and Keegan sank to one knee, sweat leaking from every pore.
"Keegan, stop!"
shouted Maeve.
"You're going to give yourself a heart attack!"
Keegan smiled.
"That would make things a lot easier, Agent Manners. The Avenger is a two-seater."
Maeve's shocked eyes darted between the Avenger's fuselage and Keegan's weakening body.
"You,"
she began.
"I was quite aware of it before we arrived here, Manners. Don't get sentimental. Just remember this moment when you're picking sides."
Augustus came jogging back, a wooden ladder tucked under his arm. He braced it against the side of the Avenger and clambered up into the cockpit. He then fished out a pilot's cap and goggles from the floorboards and tugged them onto his head.
"We're ready in 50 seconds,
he said, flicking switches and prepping the plane. A weak glow emanated from the vents in the Avenger's elemental cannon, and the engine pulsed with sudden warmth.
"Headmaster, you climb in the back and Maeve is going to sit in your lap."
"That's not a good idea, Augustus,"
said Keegan, his voice wavering.
"Let me give you a spin."
"Wait, what? She's not ready yet, sir,"
shouted Augustus. But Keegan was already drawing his glyph. It flickered and sizzled weakly, but Keegan affixed a stern look upon his face and held it in tow. With a flick of his fingers, the propeller buzzed to life. Augustus, not wanting to waste Keegan's effort, mashed the starter. It didn't catch, and Augustus pressed it over and over again, the engine whining in protest.
"Come on!"
shouted Augustus, and he slammed the heel of his palm onto the button like a hammer. The engine caught, and the whole plane roared to life. Then all of the guards poured into the hangar at once, guns blazing. Keegan forced his legs to listen to him, and he threw himself on top of Maeve, shoving her to the ground. Augustus ducked behind his seat, but continued his preparations to spin up the plane. Bullets pounded the area, rattling the plane like hammers on a xylophone.
Go,
said Keegan, futilely shoving Maeve toward the ladder. His hands were too weak to even shake her. She scrambled to her feet and scampered to the ladder, weaving the whole way as bullets raced by her delicate body. With quick and nervous work, she made her way into the passenger's seat.
Keegan!
Called Augustus, the sounds of gunshots deafening in the hangar.
Get up!
Keegan managed to swing his feet under him and stumble to the opposing side of a pile of crates. The shots of the guards chewed into the body of the Avenger, and Keegan doubted that Augustus and Maeve would survive if a shot struck the plane just so. They relentlessly emptied and reloaded their clips, never calling for surrender. Keegan willed his voice into a commanding shout.
Punch it, Ellsworth!
Then he began to draw one of the largest glyphs he had ever created. The headmaster screamed as he felt the arcane power streaming from him into the monster conduit. It was like there were millions of tiny fishhooks through each fiber of muscle, and they all tugged in different directions. His legs burned, his heart throbbed, and his vision wobbled, but Keegan held on, milking the power from his very bones.
It'll kill him!
Maeve cried, risking a glance over the side of the plane to see what had become of her rescuer. Augustus couldn't look back. He knew what was probably coming. The snowy-haired pilot threw the throttle wide and hoped that the engine had turned over enough that it wouldn't sputter out. The chunky sound of the engine smoothed into the sizzling buzz of a high-performance barnstormer, and the wheels inched forward. A single shot tore through the aileron, shredding part of its skin, and Augustus winced. A few more seconds of this, and there would be no Avenger left to fly. Keegan's battle cry reached a crescendo, and the glyph flared with the intensity of a blue bonfire. It flashed and shimmered, guttering and hissing like a wild animal. But then it stabilized. Augustus chanced to glance back and realized he had never seen his headmaster so pale as the older man placed his shaking hands to the sparking sigil. Keegan's eyes drifted about in their sockets, and cold sweat poured from his brow. Given his exertion, Keegan's heart should have stopped a long time ago. Given his expression, it probably had. The headmaster's aristocratic fingers made a final gesture, and an invisible hand shoved the Avenger forward like a locomotive in full tilt. Normally, a force like that would have crushed the delicate aircraft, but Augustus knew that Keegan had elegantly shaped his telekinesis to press evenly across the plane and its passengers. Even in his state, Keegan had an astounding mastery of his magic. As Augustus and Maeve were ripped away from their leader at breakneck speeds, they found themselves looking back one last time. Just long enough to see him collapse, unmoving as the guards rushed forward.
Keegan!
Screamed Maeve. But Augustus knew what had to come next. He traced his own tiny glyph and armed the elemental cannon with a bit of his own energy. Thanks to Keegan, they were going to blast their way out of here. Augustus would keep Maeve safe, and with any luck, another of Jonathan's visions would reunite them all. Augustus clicked the trigger on his flight stick as the steel doors rushed to meet them, and he hoped. Licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivative Works 3.0 license. For more information, visit creativecommons.org.